Yeah. Constantly pull me down while I was stuck off in them trenches. If I take a loss, bet on myself, cause I got God with me. If I take a loss.
Hey, this is September on the Life Unfiltered show. Before we get started, I want to thank Liquid Gold for the sponsorship. You may order all your hair care needs from humancareproductsllc.com. Remember, the website is on back order, so it will take a little bit longer for your products to get shipped to you. All right, before we get started, like, I just want to thank, man, I'm just, like, so happy that, like, this person's on this call with me. Like, this is one of the first people I grew up with, that I had sisterhood with, that we had our first fights. Like, she's very true and dear to my heart. We call her Pip, but she go by Kendria. She big bank, you know what I'm saying? Like, we just really grew up together between arguing about little Flip being our boyfriends, you know, stuff like that. But let me introduce y'all to my cousin, my big cousin, Pip. What's up, Pip?
All right. Hey, everybody. How y'all doing? What's up, Kenfolk?
All right. I want to thank you for actually being willing to come on, you know, with this being my first podcast, you know, getting started. You know, we could just look back on this about 5 years later and probably laugh about how green and new I am on this thing.
It's all good. It's no problem. Thank you for having me on here, cousin.
Oh, no problem. Now, you know, I pretty much like to go straight in, you know what I'm saying? I just want you to kind of tell people a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to let them know, you know, how we grew up together, if you want to, you know, just pretty much anything about, you know, who you are and, you know, what you pretty much plan on doing with your life and the impact you plan on having.
Okay, so most people don't know I grew up in Minden, Louisiana, small town, you know, very homely. I grew up in a household with both parents. A lot of people cannot say that, and I think that affects a lot of things that I have or want to do with my life because of growing up in that atmosphere and seeing two people who love each other fight for their love through thick and thin, through death do you part, and that's very important and near and dear to me. I guess growing up in a small town and having that small town mentality, but always having courage and integrity, you know, to do what I had to do to make my parents proud. I'm the oldest of three. I actually have a sister on my dad's side. I'm still the oldest. I have two brothers. I grew up after being in Minden, Louisiana. I grew up in a town called Lake Charles, Louisiana, where I finished out my high school, which I feel like molded me into a person to understand it's more to life than just, you know, one city, one town. And I think that's important to get that out there because, you know, a lot of people have never left their hometown or, you know, too scared to venture out or too scared to step out there on faith with whatever you have in your pocket and just, you know, leave and rebuild wherever you go. And I think going through all of that, learning that as a child and as a young adult, pushed me to who I am today. I'm currently in college in San Antonio is where I live. I'm getting my associates in social work and hopefully transferring to UTSA. I didn't ever think I would go to college or be one to want to be in school after high school. I can admit that. I was pretty something else when I was in high school. I had some things I was going through and trying to understand, you know, trying to be grown. You know, when they say you're trying to be grown, you got to learn lessons the hard way. So I definitely learned a lot of lessons the hard way, which molded me into who I am today as a woman, as a person, as an individual, as a sister, as a big cousin, as anything, a friend, mentor, student, everything. So I feel like a lot of that stuff is important that I went through in my life early on to where I am approaching my 30s. And I can be who I am because I done already went through all the identities of, you know, am I really this person? Did I see enough growing up? You know, you put that into your relationships and your friendships and it just makes you who you are as a person. And I'm just glad to be here and glad to overcome a lot of the things that I overcame.
Absolutely. I want to go back to when you spoke about having a two-parent household because, like, growing up, I didn't really, like, notice that, you know what I'm saying? I just knew that, you know, that's my Aunt Calista, that's my Uncle Rod. But like, I feel like y'all had more stability when it came to family than I did, you know, kind of like my mama like ran the streets, you know what I'm saying? Dropped me off. Well, she could, but I enjoyed pretty much staying there with y'all. So like, how did, like, do you think that pretty much made you stronger by having, you know, seeing both parents, both a female and a male, you know, in the family, you know what I'm saying? Like to have that daily instead of just seeing mama, you know, have different boyfriends coming in and out. Like, do you think that was better for you?
Oh yes, it definitely is a life experience that I wish most people could have, because you get both perspectives. You get a woman's perspective on a woman. You also get a man's perspective on what a woman should be and how a woman should be like. And, you know, my daddy was a strict man. You know, I couldn't be fast and be out there in them streets, you know, and my mom was the same way. But even though my mom had me young, my mom had a good head on her shoulder. She went to the Army. She came back. She went to school. You know, my dad, he was an equipment operator in the plants. You know, so it was a lot of stuff that growing up seeing, like, you, the little things, like, I can say it was two active fathers that were in the household on my whole street. So my dad wasn't just my dad. He was the dad to, you know, women who only had boys and, you know, couldn't discipline them and stuff like that. So I understand, like, that dynamic of having a household and having a family, and some may say traditionalism, you know, and, like, growing up, my daddy was ahead at the table, and my mom was at the other head of the table, and the kids ate, and we all ate as a family, whatever we ate, whether it was breakfast, lunch, brunch, you know, and we talked, and we, you know, it was just, it's something that you have to experience, and a lot of people don't get to experience, that's why I feel like a lot of people think they know what love is and know what stability is, but I saw that growing up. So I can't say, you know, this situation was best for me, but I'm just glad I was a part of it. I'm glad my parents stayed together for us to witness that and understand that, you know, stuff like that. And that's why I feel like my younger brother, RJ, he's a man of who he needs to be because of my dad, you know, and stuff like that. So he's not going to leave his family. And that's hard right now because a lot of young brothers don't understand men need to be in the household with their kids, period. You know, if things don't work out right, you know, you fight for it. And if it don't, you still, you know, participate in that child's life, because I feel like that's what kept me out of a lot of stuff, being scared of my dad. You know, I was scared of my mom too, but it was my dad, like, you know, he raised his voice and I get the crying and, you know, I didn't understand, but, you know, it was like, I needed that. And, you know, when I was 8 years old, get in the kitchen and learn how to cook, you ain't going outside to play. And I'm like, I'm not trying to be a slave. And it's just now that I'm older, I know how to cook and provide for myself and fend for myself, whether it's cooking, cleaning, going out there and working, you know, stuff like that. Like, a lot of stuff I learned from my parents, I wouldn't have knew if I was in any other predicament. So I'm grateful for that. And I take everything that I experienced as a child and as a young adult, watching them love each other through whatever, hard times, sicknesses, and everything. And I take that into my life, because that was so much a part of me. Like you said, you don't notice it when you're young until you get older. Like, you know, I didn't grow up with the same household dynamics as a lot of people. So a lot of, you know, when you get angry and your feelings get hurt, you leave. I didn't grow up seeing that, so I don't understand that. But I can't speak on, you know, how everybody else was raised. But I know being in a two-parent household with both your biological parents has an effect on you, especially as a child, especially as a woman, boy, as well. Because you need both sides.
Absolutely. Because if you don't, you go searching for that through either your friends, through your mates, or whoever, just by, you know, trying to figure out who you are and what to do and how to conduct yourself, because it's an uneven balance within that. You know what I'm saying? You only see the feminism, you know, or the negative side of the feminism. You follow what I'm saying?
Yep. I know exactly what you're saying. And, you know, my dad, he always showed love to the women in his life. It wasn't no holiday like Valentine's Day, my birthday, that I didn't receive flowers, some type of gift sent to the school from when I was in kindergarten all the way up to high school. So that was showing, if you love somebody, you appreciate the woman that's in your life, you're going to show them. And my dad did that for me and my mom. Yeah, he'll get my brother like some candies and stuff like that, but the women in his family got balloons, and you always were made to feel special, because that's what he wanted me to see. If somebody cares for you and loves you, they're going to show you through not just their actions, but their words and the way they move through life. Like, I can honestly say my dad loved me. A lot of women can't say they have a love for their dad. And that's what's important as you growing up as a woman and as any individual, as a man too, you need that, not just that motherly love, but that fatherly love. And a lot of these fathers, a lot of these young boys and girls don't get that these days. That's why they're so lost and emotional and trying to look for it in everything else, whether it's drugs, whether it's, you know, their partners, whether it's whatever, you know, whatever it is. And it's because of something was missing. So they got to go out into the world and find that. Not saying their parents or whoever raised them didn't do the best that they could, but something was missing to where, you know, like, it's just statistical too. Like, the more you read and the more you're in school, you'll see that people who grew up in two-parent households aren't perfect, but they move different. Their structure is different.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And I think they're more emotionally balanced, if that makes sense too.
Yes.
Now, with you traveling a lot, do you think, especially being by yourself, even though, like, you know, you grew up with three other siblings and everything, but you end up kind of being solo, you know, in your travels and, you know, pretty much finding yourself and building your foundation. How has that built you up as a woman? You know, because, like, do you think that, like, we was equipped enough during our childhood, you know what I'm saying, for adulthood or what?
I feel we were equipped enough, but some things you have to learn on your own through life lessons and through life, period. And like I said, I went on those journeys to do better for myself. And I feel like I was raised to handle myself in different settings. Like, I knew if I went somewhere to be aware of my surroundings, you hear people getting loud, you slowly start getting towards the exit because you don't know what could pop off. I grew up seeing, you know, when people are on different drugs and understanding, like, they might say and do things that is not common, but you know that this person is not in their right mind, so you don't take things seriously and do too much unless they present harm to you. So, you know, growing up, you know, in the country living, we always taught women always carry something. If it's mace, a gun, you know, a shank, whatever, you know, not even a shank, just a knife. Something, I mean, whatever you can get your hands on, a bat, you know. You know, you never know. Yay. So I feel like that taught me a lot of, you know, roughness and toughness, especially growing up with brothers. You know, after a certain age, you know, them boys get big and their testosterone, you know, and you can't play with them the same. And I learned, and I think a lot of women didn't learn that, you know, because a lot of women are, I won't say masculine, but a lot of women didn't have to be strong for a long time, and their moms had to be strong for a long time. So they don't understand the fact of women can't do the same thing as men do. It's just not the same. It's not meant to be, you know, but certain things you can. Just like I worked construction. A lot of women do not want to work construction. Now that right. I'm older, I don't feel like it's a place for women. But if you got the courage and you got the willpower to do it, nothing stops you from doing that. Because I have did that. But in a sense of frame, like, when women get older, you want to do less. I don't care what nobody says. You're going to want to do less. You don't want to be out there in the heat. You don't want to be out there in the cold. Men, they get up, they do what they got to do, you know, and it is what it is. But like I said, growing up in the household with both men and women, certain things I didn't have to do because I was a woman, like mowing grass and taking out. I never had to do that. That was my brother's dealings. You know, man, I was more like, right. You know, I was more like wash dishes and, you know, keep the house clean and fold laundry. And I was comfortable with that because hard labor is not something every woman wants to do. It's not, you know, in us to do it, but we will do it for the sake of whatever we have to do to survive. And I think growing up with my parents and seeing hard work and dedication to their jobs and careers and just dedication to their family made me who I am. So when I step out into the world, whether I'm alone, whether I'm with people or co-workers, I know how to behave in any type of scene. And plus, just dealing through life with everything that I've been through and seen, I know how to react and how to, you know, put myself out of some things. I'm not, you know, I was never taught to be a follower. So you can't get me to go and, you know, go over here and do this and do that without any, you know, purpose to it. So I feel like that had a lot of influence on me.
You adapt to your surroundings based off how they can, you know, accept you. That's how, you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't be cussing for saying, but I feel myself. You get it?
Of course, of course. And it's not that you're not being two-faced. It's that, like you said, you know how to adapt to your surroundings. You're not going to go up to women that's in their 50s and 60s saying stuff that you'll say to women's in their 20s and 30s. It's not being two-faced. It's knowing how to adapt and how to talk to people who are indifferent. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, in ways, you know, my mom was a professional lady. She worked in hospitals and stuff like that. And everybody loved her. You know, some people, you know, you put on your white voice and stuff when you go to work, but you're not, still not taking away from who you are. And, you know what I'm saying, your authenticity as a person, as a woman, and as a mother, especially as a Black woman in a professional scene. So you don't want to be the same person wherever you go. I'm not going to be the same person at my school as I am at, you know, a domino game with my family. I'm not going to be the same person at the domino game when I go to work. You know, it's just, it's certain aspects in life where you know how to take yourself out of something and put yourself in a predicament to grow and understand that people are different. You know, it's different cultures, it's different religions, it's different everything. It's different beliefs, it's different. It's just a different time in today's world anyway. So you don't have to be one person. All it is you being yourself and understanding that you can't act. Especially as Black people ourselves, we can't act out the way. We can't go to, you know, an all-white situation with hostile anger as we are at a barbecue, as a cookout with our family and friends, being just, you know, who we are as ourselves. And I think a lot of people don't get that because they feel like they shouldn't have to change who you are. You're not changing who you are. You're adapting to your surroundings. And if you don't know how to adapt to your surroundings, you'll always forever be in the same situation and not being afforded so many different opportunities because you stuck in a box.
Man, you've been dropping so many gems, man. So let me ask you this. You know, you had your locks before me, and I just got my locks like 4 years ago or whatnot. Do you think you having your locks have ever kept you from getting a job or maybe discriminated against, or what? Or you just think it didn't ever matter for you?
For me personally, I've never had a job getting, I never had a problem getting a job because of my locks. If anything, it added on to my personality because I've been having these locks since I was in 11th grade. That was over 10 years ago. So they're long, they're beautiful, you know, they're dark black. I keep them well maintained, and people just don't understand. Is that all your hair, and how did it get that long? And, you know, it's how you present yourself. Like, I would say that when I was younger and I wanted to work in different settings, before people started accepting everything like tattoos and, you know, braids and locks. Cause I remember being 20 and working at the casino there in Lake Charles, LaBerge. And I wanted to transition from being a cook to working as a security on the casino floor. And they wanted me to cut my dreads. And I was like, oh, no, this is just a job. It would never, you know, be that serious to where I take something that I love from myself just to make some money. You know, and I feel like that's selling out because it's always going to be another job. And now I look up 10 years later, everybody got dreads at the casino. You know, I see doctors with full sleeves and neck tattoos, and nothing can stop you like that. You're a person outside of a job. So if they want somebody to be a robot, they'll hire a robot. That's how I feel about it, because everybody has their own personality. I'm not going to not be who I am because of, you know, I'm going to stick to the guidelines of your dress code and everything, but I'm not going to not have a personality because of, you know, corporate America, or it doesn't, you know. And I think back to that day when they asked me to cut my dreads at the casino, and I was like, so infuriated and so mad, and I just didn't understand it. And it was because it was a Black guy asking me to do it, and he was like, look, man, you can always grow your hair back. You know, this is a chance to make $10 an hour. I'm like, it's not worth it to me. You know, it's not worth it to me. And I look back, I'm like, I'm so glad I didn't, you know, do that, because I didn't even stay at that job long. And now here I am, I'm being accepted and working security jobs at banks, and it didn't stop me. You know what I'm saying? That was just a casino job. I done worked at private banks. I done worked at private parties, you know, catering and stuff like that, amongst millionaires, billionaires, you know, people who donate money to hospitals, charities, people who own car dealerships, and
it was never a problem. They love my hair. So I feel like in certain places and certain things, I don't want to say it's a Louisiana thing, but in certain jobs and certain things, it's gonna get to you because you feel like, man, look, this is my hair. This is who I am. I'm a person outside of this job. But if they can't get with the times, like I said, I work in a hospital now and I see doctors with sleeves and neck tattoos and tattoos by their eyes, and that don't take away from their professionalism or what they do as a person.
Facts. And I'm actually glad, and I want to show appreciation that you actually, you know, stood your ground, because during that time, I would have caved in. I would have sold out. I ain't gonna lie to you, because I felt like, well, dang, I try to keep my job, you know what I'm saying? I might be missing out on a raise, you know what I'm saying? But the new me, you know what I'm saying? I'm rebellious. So thank you, because you done paved the way for, you know, for another person, especially for me, you know what I'm saying? So I stood my ground too, because I had a mentor to tell me not to lock my hair, you know, because of the negative, you know, outlook on it and whatnot. But it's like, you know, I don't really know how to do my hair, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to keep on paying nobody to do my hair every week. And like, to me, this is the best thing for me, if that makes sense. Shoot.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to stop getting perms in high school, and I was like, I'm not going to keep getting braids. What I'm going to do? So I dreaded my hair. I dreaded my hair 4 times. Before I found a way that I liked it. The first time I dreaded my hair, they were too fat and they weren't enough. The second time, I just didn't like them. And I was like, no, I combed them out in the shower. The third time, I didn't like the parts of my dread. So that's the beautiful thing about dreads. You can always restart. If you don't want your dreads to get long, you can cut them and, you know, keep them in the style that you like. Certain styles I can't wear because my hair is so long, and certain styles people can't wear because their hair is not long enough. And that's the diversity of dreads. Like, it's so beautiful. I love to see people with dreads. I don't care what color you are. I don't care how long your dreads is. I don't care if you just start your dreads. It's just like, it is a freeing journey when you let your hair do what it does. And a lot of people don't understand, when you're not putting so many products in your hair does this thing. It grows. It beautifies itself. So why would I take a chance on cutting my hair, listen to a man that's bald head, that's, you know, he done sold out for whatever position he in, and he this is the only job he gonna know, when I know I was going further than that. So no, I wasn't cutting my dreads.
And I'm glad that you kept your strong mind. Now let's get back on these perms, because man, I used to get a perm every 3 weeks. Like, my grandma told me, ooh, it's time for a perm. Like, soon the top of my head, the crown of my head started getting a little nasty where you can't comb through. She thought, time to perm my hair. We're doing all this stuff at home in the kitchen.
Yeah, and that's a lot of things. Like, you know, traditions don't change unless it takes somebody to step in and be like, look, we're not doing this no more. Like, you don't think I had to go back and forth with my mom and my dad? I remember it was my graduation, I had my dreads, and my dad was like, okay, now it's time for you to do your hair. I'm like, Dad, this is my hair. He like, for real? Oh. You know, he thought it was some braids that I just, you know, had sold in or whatever. And I was like, no, Dad, this is my hair. And my mom was like, no, yeah, that's her hair. Like, she can't do nothing with it but get it retwisted and stuff like that. Because I told my mom, I don't want perms no more. You know, I'm not doing the perm thing no more. I want my hair to grow, and I want my hair to be, you know, natural. And I wanted to define me. Like, I feel like a lot of people growing up didn't know how to deal with different courses of hair. So what they do is, oh, I don't like the way it looking. It should be straight. Black women have never had just straight hair. It's nowhere in history that black women had just perfectly straight hair. You know, we either have, you know, the bushy hair or the really fine hair that curls up when you wet it, or just, you know, the real curly hair that you can maintain. And if you get into humidity and it might puff out and you look like a little poodle. Black women has never had straight hair. And I feel like a part of the industry, you know, I want to say around 1940s and 50s, wanted black women to have straight hair. Because you remember the movie Superfly, and you see all the beautiful black women with the froze and everything. And like, somewhere along the line, it transitioned into, you know, the supermodels having their hair flat ironed and pressed and combed. And that was the beauty of it, because they looked at more like white women, you know. And at the end of the day, we're not all meant to look the same. So, and a lot of these products are not backed by black people anymore. You remember, I don't know if you remember, but growing up, when we used to get black products, they used to have a black lady on the back of each product that was black. those products no longer exist because they sold out to a bigger brand. So now it's nothing made genuinely for us, and that it's people like you that I appreciate that are making products for people who have different things, alopecia, you know, thin hair, balding, stuff like that. We don't have those type of products that are, you know, made from within our communities no more. Right. So they don't understand our hair. So, oh, you know, it might have a black person on, you know, the perm box, but we don't own anything no more. So those chemicals and all that stuff in there is what they want us to look like, and it's what they want us to, and it's what they want. It's not what we want. And, you know, certain people, they'd rather have their hair perm because they don't want to have to go through, you know, the napping process, or that's all they know. But I feel since I cut chemicals out of my hair has grown so long and so beautiful, and I would never have got to this point if I want to stop, you know, getting perms. And like I tell people, like, it has to be within you to want that. Like, a lot of people are cool with, you know, wearing, you know, weave, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I feel as being natural, you at your most natural state, it's nothing more freeing than that. It's nothing in the world that can make me feel the way my locks feel. Like, in walking into a setting of different, you know, different cultures and different racist, and they ask, you know, is that all that's your hair? Oh my God, it's so beautiful, it's so pretty. Because it's like you see white women wear their hair long, you see Mexican women wear their hair long, and Chinese people wear their hair long. So I'm not saying it's a flex, but it's a sense of pride. It's a sense of,
it is,
it's a sense, it's a flex. Of it's a flex, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people cannot relate until they sew some stuff in their head. I'm walking around naturally with good hair, wavy hair, curly hair, long hair, beautiful hair. And you get in a set and they like, oh my God, is that all yours? Oh my God, I'm amazed. I'm impressed. You know, and it boosts you up, and it's like, I'm just me, and this is all me. I'm not being nobody but me. This is what comes with me. This hair, the attitude, the mentality, it all comes with me. And it's so freeing. And I just love to say, yeah, it's all mine. Yeah, no, nothing added in. You know, and it just amazes so many people. Even black women, they're amazed.
We really do, but I'm kind of glad that we done got away from them perms, especially as a whole, because like, look how they find out, you know, cancer and ovarian cancer and you know, different hormone problems are linked to all them perms we've been putting in our heads, and probably the dyes too, you know what I'm saying? Because there's really nobody really doing tests on these things until after people die and after they start going to the doctor, and then they start seeing a linkage of, you know, these people taking these chemicals, you know what I'm saying? But it's too late now.
Yep. It's too late now. If you've been getting perms for the last 50 years, you know, and that's what I tell people, like, your scalp, look how our body is made. We're not made to put all those chemicals on top of our head. Our hair is connected to our scalp. Our scalp is a part of our head. Our head is a part of what? Everything on our body. We need our head for everything. It holds the brain. It holds the eyes. It holds the nose. It holds the ears. It's not meant to be receiving chemicals through that. It's not. Right. Wonder why you can't think and you got brain fog. You don't put all them chemicals in your head. And, you know, I just remember my head being on fire. And they like, just wait a little longer so the perm can take. If it take that long for it to straighten your hair, I don't want it.
And then end up with a chemical burn, your hair just bleeding to your scalp.
Yeah. Hair just thin. You know, it's just fried.
Yep. Losing more hair. You know, you see how that hair bunched up. You're like, ooh, I got so much new growth. And then you have that perm in, you comb half of it out.
You comb half of it out. I remember seeing my mama throw that my hair off them combs, and she put all that perm in my hair and combed through the perm. And I'm like, I done lost like 3 inches just with this perm.
Big old tumbleweeds. And then they use the smallest comb to part your hair and comb
it out. Yeah, oh yeah, man. I if I was to ever have kids, they would not get perms. They
our
would
parents
not.
Must have disliked us a little bit. You know what I'm saying? It's just like a little miniature torture. Once a
I remember my dad, I remember my mom used to perm my hair, and I remember I would cry so much, and my dad was like, let me perm it. And my dad would start perming my hair, and I was like, I don't like getting perms. He was like, well, you know, you don't have bad hair, you know, but you got to decide, because you're not finna walk around here with your hair just in the fro and looking all crazy, because we ain't raised you like that. So that's what transitioned me to get the dreads.
Okay, I ain't never know that story. But yeah, yeah. They make a lot of sense. Make a lot of sense. Sure. Well, Pip, I want to thank you for being on this podcast. If people want to hear more, because you really got a lot of stories. You got a lot of depth to you. It's a lot of substance, you know. And I love the way that I just say one word and you can just run with it. You know what I'm saying? Because you're so experienced in life. Now, I just want to thank you so much for your time. You just don't understand how much this really means to me. You know what I'm saying? Because, you my family and you support me. You know what I'm saying?
Of course. We got to support each other. We can't expect other people to support people before we even support them. That's not right.
Absolutely.
Especially me knowing you. I can see if you were somebody on the street, you know. People do more for somebody on the street than for their own family. And that's why we're not getting ahead as a whole.
Facts.
So it's no problem. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on here and listening to my stories and, you know, just being an understanding person and just, you know, letting me have this opportunity.
Oh, no problem. All right. To our viewers, thank y'all so much for listening. This is the Life Unfiltered Show.
Yeah. Constantly pull me down while I was stuck off in them trenches.